So take that position of we're getting more HB2 visas into Mar-a-Lago because we need cheap labor. We need those cheap labor. Now, take that and look at the story that came out today that says that Trump's lawyers, the government lawyers, are saying, yeah, we can't find the parents of 38 of the children that we ripped from their parents' arms. So we can't find the parents to give the kids back. You know, just can't seem to do it. According to the Department of Health and Human Services, they're only able to reunify about half of the 100 children under the age of 5. As you know, the judge said to the Trump administration, get those kids back to their parents by July 10th. The administration said, well, you know, we can't do it. Sorry, you know, we snatched them all right. And giving them back, we didn't really think about. Didn't spend a lot of time on that. Now, according to government lawyers, they have parents of the 19 kids who evidently they released from custody and they're somewhere in the U.S. They evidently lost them. And then 19 kids' parents, they deported, kicked them out, and lost them as well. So here's an idea. Maybe they could have given these 38 people the HB2 visas to work at Mar-a-Lago. Could have kept the families together. We'd know where they are. It's nuts. And here to share some thoughts on just how crazy things are, I've asked our good friend David Yankovic to come talk with us. David, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me, Rick. How are you?
Angry. I look at these stories and I can only be angry, and I hope people pay attention to this stuff and are as angry as I am come November so we throw these bums out.
Well, coming up on your show after me, you're going to have Brett Pransky, who's one of my favorite candidates. I'll talk a little bit about that too. Angry is a good word for this. One thing you left out, though, is the reason why they couldn't get the kids back by the government-mandated time or by the judge-mandated time was because of dog sitting. So that's more important than getting the kids back. And right now, we don't even know how many kids are still in custody.
Right.
It's good to be pissed. I think that's a good default way to go. And, you know, we always start off the show by talking about corruption. We're going to continue that, apparently.
No, look, at the end of this, you've got to fuel this anger with action. And you know, it's one thing to just be ticked off. And it's one thing to be perpetually, you know, outraged. It's another thing to take that outrage, to take that anger as fuel and use it to throw these bums out. And then to start talking about, you know, how are we going to do this the right way? You know, what kind of direction? You know, once we get rid of this cancer that's infected our government, how do we move it in a direction that's going to be beneficial for all of us, that we have an economy that works for everyone, that nobody in this country dies because they're poor? How do we move forward collectively together as opposed to a hooray for a few and screw everybody else?
Well, I mean, that's a good point you bring up. You know, one thing I say when I'm talking to people is, I'm glad you're angry. Now, what are you going to do about it? Are you going to get to November and you're going to have a Democratic candidate that you didn't support in the primary and you disagree with them on two issues and not vote? Or are you going to look at, you know, Holocaust denier in Illinois? Or are you going to look at what...
No, call him what he is. He's a Nazi.
Yeah, well, a literal Nazi. Are you going to look at that and be like, well, you know what, I'm not going to vote because I don't agree with the Democrat on three issues here? Or are we going to finally get together on this thing and do it? Like, how mad are you, really? Are you mad enough to really come together and do something about this, or are you going to stay home? That's the question I have for, you know, the American public going into 2018 here is, let's just see how far we've come. You know, you always start that song off when I come on your show. I appreciate it because I like that song. But really, let's see how far we've come. Are we still going to do this, or are we going to get together and we're going to win some races?
No, you know, I've had conversations with people who during the election were saying, there's no way I'm voting for Hillary. No, she's the devil. And I've gone back to them now and go, you now have seen what the devil looks like.
But this isn't even just a Democrat thing. This is a national argument.
Sure.
You know, I know a lot of Republicans out there who said, I can't vote for Hillary. She's the devil. I'm going to stay home. I can't vote for Donald Trump. I'm going to stay home. I can't vote for Roy Moore. I'm going to stay home. I can't vote for X name of candidate. You know, that's, I'm tired of people staying home. Government's made by those who show up. So are you going to show up or are you going to stay home? If you're going to stay home, stop complaining on Twitter because I'm tired of hearing it.
But actually, I got to tell you, I'm okay with, you know, Trump supporters staying home. I'm okay with Roy Moore supporters staying home.
You know, here's the thing. Like, if you're disgusted by something, show up.
Yeah.
Like, I'm tired of this thing. I don't want them to stay home. If you, like, that's the coward's way out. And they're all a bunch of cowards. Keyboard warrior cowards. And That's what they do. They'll stay home and they won't say anything. I want them to show up and vote their conscience. Country over party. Right now, there's treason, there's corruption, and they keep telling me I can't say treason because we're not technically at war. So whatever the Hatch Act, you know, and all that is, you know, is.
We'll go with treasonous.
Yeah. Let's just call it what it is. It's treason. I don't care about the definition of the legal. I mean, if you look at history, this is treason. We just celebrated the 4th of July, you know, and that was probably the biggest act of treason Americans ever did, right, when we went against the British. Be patriotic. Are you for America or are you for Russia? I'm tired of this.
No, I mean, if you remember the Bush years, you know, there was all this talk about aid and comfort. I'm sure you remember it. You know, providing aid and comfort to the enemies. That's treason. Well, you know what? hello?
I'm going to go back to another Bush term. It's shock and awe. Let's do that in November. How about that?
Yeah, that's I'm actually on board with that one. But here's the thing that gets me, and you know, my fear is, and we always go to this place as well, is that you know eventually we get outrage fatigue. I talk to people who are tired, and this administration is constantly throwing chaos in every direction at people, in the hopes that the anger, the outrage, the frustration will just be so much that we break.
Oh, that's a strategy. That's what they want to do. You know, from the very first week of this administration when, you know, they had all these different bills and all the executive orders and everything happened all at one time, at the same time that the hearing nominations were for, you know, his cabinet. You know, they put it all together. They threw everything they possibly could at the exact same time because the average American only has the attention span of a moth. So we have to, you know, we can't get fatigued. We have to continue fighting on every single front. And right now we're so close. Literally, we are 4 months away to the day, 4 months away from the midterm, the most historic midterms in the history of this country, I'm going to say. At least definitely the most consequential. If they get control of the Senate again and control of the House again, if you thought these last 2 years were rough, wait till the next two. Wait till we have more, you know, the Supreme Court nominees and Roe versus Wade's up and, you know, everything. I mean, it's time. Like, get on board, get them the hell out. And we'll start winning again. I'm tired. I don't want to hear the divisiveness. I don't want to hear, but I don't agree on this thing. Like, if it's a bad candidate, don't vote for him. But, I mean, don't stay home.
No, even if you got to write somebody in. Now, you know, I take my kids to the polls with me every election cycle. And if there's somebody that I don't like, I'll write somebody in that I do. As a protest vote, if anything.
I'm good with that. Just show up.
Yeah.
And then if you show up, then you don't get to, you know, then you get to complain on Twitter with me.
Yeah, no, look, you know, I do this for a living, so it would be hypocritical of me not to show up. I'm a super voter. I've voted in every election as far back as I can remember, simply because I want to have that ability to complain.
Yeah, and one thing that I also want to caution people on, is you have local elections, you have state elections, and we have the national elections. Just showing up for the national elections isn't going to do it. Republicans won 1,000 seats over the last 8 years. If we're going to start winning 1,000 seats back, you need to start getting your city council and putting people in there you want.
Absolutely.
You know, all these local races actually impact people a lot more significantly in their everyday lives than the national stuff does. The national is just what we're arguing about. This is the direction of our country. But the local, what your city taxes are going to be in, you know, what the curriculum and the school boards are going to be, what your money you're going to have to pay to the schools is going to be even. You know, all that comes from your local government. Show up. Like, I'm tired of hearing it. Like, if you didn't show up, don't complain. I'm tired of it.
I'm with you. But, you know, the thing that has always got me confused is, you know, the presidential election's one thing. And up until Trump being in office, the president didn't have an awful lot of control over your daily lives. It was, you know, the local mayor, the town council, the school board, you know, the dog catcher, you know, local inspectors, whatever. And, you know, we all go out for the big sexy elections where they spend a ton of money. But the ones, as you point out, that matter the most to us, not so much.
And if we really want to break their backs, if we really, really want to give them a bad time, take out the grassroots. Take them out the local level of government and the movement that they have there and put Democrats there. And that's a good way to stop the impact because they have it coordinated all the way from nationally all the way down to, you know, some guy with a radio show with two viewers. You know, they're putting this stuff through.
No, and look, at the end of the day, they funded heavily and they've, you know, and I keep telling people, you know, look back to the T-Twizzlers and the 9/12 groups and all of the grassroots organizing. And I'm often reminded of, do you remember who Ralph Reed was?
Oh, yeah.
He was being interviewed and they asked them, you know, how the moral majority and all the organizing that they did came about. And he took out the SWOC the Steelworkers Organizing Handbook, and said, you know, this is what we followed. We followed the labor union's methods of getting in the streets and well, for them, into the churches and you know, talking individually with all of the people and organizing the grassroots first. And if you remember, you know, back when, you know, they were pushing Alito into the Supreme Court, they were having Justice Sundays, where they would link up 10,000 churches across the country so that everybody could, you know, get on board with a good God-fearing, you know, Judge Alito and push him through. And that kind of organizing the left doesn't really have yet.
No, and we got to get to work. And, you know, you brought up a really good point, and it kind of jogged my memory about something. So during the 2016 election for the presidential, you know, of course, both camps were sent by Facebook a memo on how to effectively use Facebook. One camp used it, one camp didn't. And the camps that used it won. This month, Donald Trump, since June 1st, has put 55,000 digital ads on social media, which, in my experience, is the most I've ever seen.
Right.
So we have a lot of work to do. And if you're out there and you're listening to this show, digital is going to be the wave of the future, what we're working on. You know, of course, you need your field. You need your people knocking on doors and canvassing. But get online and get vocal. Get behind your candidates. Help them get attention. Help them raise money. The digital battlefront is where it's at.
Absolutely. In fact, you know, I've said a couple times that the digital ads are the new yard signs. Because we now know that yard signs don't work at all, and billboards are even more worthless. It's the digital ads, that thing that's, you know, subconsciously in your eye all the time, and subconsciously giving you that message all the time.
I will say that, you know, in Alabama, I think yard signs worked. You know, we had 100,000 to one, I think, down there. But, I mean, the thing is digital is everything that you're doing, digital door knocking, you know, where, you know, sending emails to people and canvassing, all that stuff, you know, it's much more effective a lot of the time to contact someone through, you know, social media or digital to ask them to vote than it is to knock on their door. It offends people sometimes when you knock on their door, but digitally they feel much more at ease with that. I want to see campaigns utilizing this more. The Republicans have about a 9-year head start on us, and we're
getting. How is that possible? Let me stop you. How is that possible? Because 2008, the Obama people were supposedly on the cutting edge of all of this stuff. They were so far of everybody else, and you know, they did the best, you know, online organizing, and they had the best tools and the, you know, the best apps. How is it possible that during his term they completely fell out of out of the race?
Well, first off, I want to tell you that they were at the cutting edge. Do you want the truth? Can you handle it?
I can handle the truth. Tell me.
So the truth of this is that there was a memo that was written by the United States military around 2012 regarding the rise of ISIS. There was one in 2005 as well, but 2012 was the one about ISIS. And basically how they were using memes and how they were using social media and digital to recruit people so much more effectively than the United States is. The right took that and began utilizing that for their game plan on how to win elections, and the left didn't. So the right has this basically insurgent theory war plan, and they see it as a war. We all know, everybody who's listening can agree with me there, on how to, you know, use basically propaganda to change the United States with memes and with digital advertising and all of this. The left never went that way. And, you know, I mean, we always try to be the high-minded ones who try to do it right, and we're trying to make government good and everything else. And the right is like, we don't care if we make government good, we're corrupt, and we're just going to do whatever the hell we want to. And that's been to our cost. And that's the truth. That's how we got so far out of this.
So we got a lot of catching up to do.
We have about 8 years of catching up. At least we have 6 years of catching up. And they know how to do this. They know how to do it well. And you've seen it last night. The president made a major speech and, you know, controlled the news cycle. Has everybody riled up? That's all anybody could think about or talk about, is what he was saying and the things that were coming out. You know, we're completely being manipulated by a group that knows we can only handle so much information, and they're throwing it all at us at the same time. And he's dominating news cycle after news cycle. And until we can kind of put the remote down and stop listening to him and get to work, he's going to continue to dominate. And I hate saying that because you know how much I hate him. But that's the truth. We have to get to work. Like Obama used to say, don't boo, vote, you know, and I agree with him, you know, but it's also, how mad are you? Are you mad enough to vote? Are you angry enough to, I mean, we're marching, we're organizing, we're doing all this, but, I mean, at the end of the day, are we going to get separated again, or are we going to go out there and vote our butts off?
No, no. I mean, the reality is, I've been saying for a while, you know, the most important march is coming up in November. You know, do the, you know, the women's march, do the gun march, do the, you know, the separate families march, do all that stuff. It's great. It's good organizing. It's good, you know, community building. It's all that stuff. But at the end, the most important march is going to be that one on November 6th to the polls.
Yeah, man. I don't want to minimize what these marches represent, because this is not our country, and this is not who we are as a people. And every single time we have a march, and it's in the hundreds of thousands, it's because another major backbone of our country has been shattered. You know, another mass shooting has happened, or, you know, another Me Too movement is going through because somebody's horrendous somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, so all that's incredibly important, but you're right. The most important thing you can do is march your rear ends to the polls and vote them out.
Did you see his bizarre, I read some of his spiel from Montana yesterday on the program, which, you know, reading. Have you ever tried to read his off the cuff speeches? I mean, it's really, it's damn near impossible.
Yeah, I want someone out there who's listening right now to like take his speech and put it in crayon and just put it up on social media, because that's really what it is. He thinks in crayon.
And put it on toilet paper.
Yeah, and put it on toilet paper.
But you know, I looked at this, and you know, he attacked a whole bunch of people, and actually attacked the Me Too movement, which was, I thought, very, very interesting, given the guy's, you know, past. You would think at some point, being the grabber by the you-know-what thing, and with all of the, you know, the allegations of this, that, and the other, that would be one area he would kind of steer clear of, but nope, went right after him.
Well, that's the oldest rule in politics, is take your greatest strength, your greatest weakness, and turn it into your greatest strength. And that's what he's doing. The fact that he keeps attacking women is interesting to me for a different reason. Now, every single exit poll that has happened and every single election since he's become president has shown at least a 20% increase in women voters. And every time he attacks them, he just pisses them off more. Again, the election is in 4 months. So every woman out there who's listening, 4 months. Show them. Lead the world.
Yeah, and the other part of this is, you know, come Monday when he chooses his nominee for the Supreme Court, and I think it's going to be the woman who is going to be the deciding vote to overturn Roe versus Wade. You've made your daughters, your sisters, your mothers much, much more unsafe. I mean, we're going back to the future of, you know, unfortunately, poor women dying in alleys.
You know, the level of anger and frustration that I feel, I'm trying this show not to curse or be good. I know you're, you know, but it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous that we're here, 2018. The fact that there's even, I mean, racism like this still. I mean, you know, for years and years and years, everybody said, well, it's not so bad. You know, we've made a lot of progress and everything. But you're seeing that there really wasn't a lot of progress. We're seeing that sexism is still rampant. We're seeing that racism is still rampant. It's just that they were quiet for a while. You know, all the dog whistles and everything over the last 25, 35, 45 years, yeah, that's all it's been. It's been dog whistles, but it's all still there. They're still waiting in the shadows to come back out again. It's yep. Time for us to go back and beat them back into the shadows.
There you go. I'm right there with you. And that begins tomorrow. That begins the next day. And it continues right on through election and on into 2020. In 2022, it's the never-ending battle in this war for sanity, for making America America again.
4 months left. It begins right now.
There you go. David, I appreciate the thoughts, the time. Good stuff.
All right. Thank you, Rick, for having me.
As always, our good friend David Yankovich. Look, he's right. You know, march to the polls. Mark it on the calendar. Put the ringer, you know, the little string around the finger. Do what you got to do. But remember, November 6th. Quick break. Right back.